Hello and welcome to another episode of Tales from the Doghouse Separation Anxiety Explained. I'm Ness Jones and I am from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded in Australia. And with me today is...
Your introductions are always accompanied by heavy breathing. You're listening to me, Sarah McLaren from Separation Anxiety Solutions in the UK.
And I am Stacey Bell with Focused Fun in the US. Today we're talking about when training doesn't seem to be working, or when the pet parent just doesn't have the headspace for training, and just issues and topics surrounding that.
It's a big one, a big topic.
It is a big one. It is a big one. And I think especially when your dog is struggling or going through kind of a blip or even a regression, it's easy to start questioning the process and you know, maybe even at the start, just not feeling like you have the energy or headspace to put in everything that it takes to help your dog through its struggles and being home alone. What are some reasons, just to start out, that you guys can think of why training wouldn't be working for a particular dog?
Well, it might need a med review if it's not already on meds, or it might need meds, medication. Mm-hmm. Yeah, might need something to facilitate the training and just give it a helping hand. That could be one reason. Sarah?
I think another reason, and maybe the one of the biggest reasons, at least from what I see, is just pushing the dog too hard.
Yes.
You know, training in that zone where, no, they're not panicking, but they're showing some low levels of anxiety. And so at that point, the dog's just not learning that they're comfortable home alone. They're learning that they're slightly anxious while they're home alone.
I think a lot of people have that problem when they're doing the training by themselves. So
I think so too. Yeah.
They want to do their 5-minute absence, for example, but they'll get to their 5-minute, and then they're like, oh, the dog was quiet. Let's see how long it takes for them to start barking, which means obviously they're going to undermine their training once the dog gets to that point. So yeah,
right.
That will definitely expedite either regression or variability in their training.
Yep.
Expedite. Did I mean expedite or expedite?
Oh. Expedite.
Expedite.
Oh.
Oh.
No, now. Oh.
Sarah's doing some deep thinking.
Faster. yeah, I think you're right. Ness is right there with the business web where, as human beings, we always want to push everything that we do. We always want to do it once more, or just leave it that little bit longer, just try that little bit harder, because we're certainly of a generation where you get a lot of push. Certainly, I think for those of you who are listening to us, we're not 20 anymore.
maybe 22.
25 maybe. I think Ness is about 26. We're not babies anymore, and I think I definitely see with I'm not being ageist, but I definitely see a generation from before where it's this, you know, book yourself up and just get on with it, but you need to push. And yes, they'll be fine. It doesn't matter if they're squeaking a bit, they'll be okay. Whereas I think we're learning now that that's not the case, that we don't need to push. And no, they're not okay when they're squeaking. We need to be able to keep things under a threshold. But then for some people, the overwhelm of trying to do that is just, you know, they start to flounder and things get very difficult, and then they stop training, or they don't train as much as they could do, which then leads to less I've forgotten the word now. less progression because they're not training, and then because they're getting less progression, they get frustrated, and then when right. they get frustrated, they start to resent the dog, and then when they start to resent the dog, that's when we're in a whole other world of how it can all go horribly wrong.
Yeah, it's a chain reaction, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a common, the overwhelmed feeling, and along with kind of feeling trapped.
Mm, I'm frustrated.
And because there's not because there's not a quick or fix. Yeah, it's not going to take, you know, a month to be able to leave your dog for 4 hours. You know, if you don't have things in place to be able to still do some of the things that you enjoy doing, that trapped feeling can lead to that resentment that you were talking about, Sarah.
Mm. And particularly at the start, isn't it, when you first start the training, and you just see this, like, what looks like a huge list of all these things that you've got to do, that's going to take you forever. And one of the questions that I know I ask on an intake form, and I'm sure you girls ask as well, is you know, in order for training to work, we need these dogs to not be left alone. But when we say that, we don't mean that you can never leave your dog alone ever again. What it means is that while we are teaching your dog how to be alone, you need to be able to manage those absences. But it doesn't mean that you can't go anywhere, especially if you've got a dog that just doesn't, it's just they don't want to be alone, but they can be with anybody else. It just means that we're back to that, you know, building your village, finding people who can look after them, neighbours, friends, family, dog walkers, dog carers, all those other resources that are out there. When we're saying you mustn't leave your dog alone, that's what we mean, is that you can, you know, try and find as much help as you can, because you going out for a coffee with a friend, or, you know, going, even just going out for a pint of milk, can be huge when you've got that dog.
Okay, so another thing that I think that I see kind of impeding progress is when the dog has either but like other behavioral issues, like bigger behavioral issues, that could be, you know, they have big feelings about seeing other strange dogs or strange people, or it can be sensitivity to noises, it can be generalized anxiety. A lot of times when a dog has behavioral struggles in addition to separation anxiety, we can see that the separation anxiety case is harder to resolve, especially if the pet parent hasn't committed to medication, or it's difficult to get the medication, the right medication for that dog, dialed in. Along those same lines, but different, is if the dog has a lot of medical issues. Chronic ear infections, skin infections, gut pain,
gut, stomach problems,
gut stuff,
digestive stuff. Yeah, for sure. And that's why we always recommend our clients to reach out to a vet and make sure that there's nothing else going on top of what they think might be separation anxiety, whether it is or isn't.
Another one that we talked about a couple weeks ago is if you have frequent routine changes. I've had a couple clients who travel a lot for work. And so that makes it hard for, it depends on the dog. I've had some dogs where they just kind of, once they kind of get used to that routine of sometimes you're here and sometimes you're not, as long as you have like a committed pet sitter for your dog that's not going to leave your dog over threshold, then some dogs kind of get used to it pretty quickly, and then other dogs just struggle with it every single time you leave. So that's another one. If you're having frequent kind of setbacks because of routine changes, that can affect your overall training.
Yeah, for sure.
And now we've got the added pressure for people of post-lockdown situations where suddenly they're having to go back to work, particularly in the UK at the minute now. There's a lot of people who in the next month or so are going to have to go back to work 3-4 days a week where they've been at home for the majority of the time. That's a lot of pressure there. And these guys, you know, they're asking you if we can get the dog sorted by the end of January or February. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, you can't. There's no way around that. It takes time no matter which way you do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think another one where owners can struggle with the training not working is, you know, hyper attachment, but especially when that person is living by themselves. So, in fact, it doesn't probably even need to be hyper attachment, but if that person is living by themselves and they don't feel like they've got options, even though we know that they probably do, but, you know, say doggy daycare is not an option because they can't afford it, or the dog's reactive to other dogs or even to strangers, they can really feel trapped and feel like they've got nowhere to go. And even to the point where maybe the dog's fine with other people, but they feel like they can't get a flatmate, for example, because when they walk out the door, the dog's hyper-attached to them. So the poor person, the flatmate, the person that is left behind, has to cope with this dog absolutely having a meltdown while they're trying to do whatever they're trying to do, watch TV or study or do some work at home or whatever it is. And it puts a lot of pressure on that person. So then the owner feels that they can't have anybody living with them purely for that reason, because they don't want to force their dog's issues on the person coming in. So, or, you know, it's quite hard for those people.
Saying that, I mean, I have to say that as the owner of a hyper-attached dog, even not being on your own isn't always that useful. So Ernie, bless his little cotton socks, still finds it very, very difficult to stay with my husband. Very difficult, to the point where in certain situations, if I leave him even for seconds, I can hear him shouting for me to come back because he's like, please don't leave me with daddy. And then in other situations, he's fine, but he's very hit and miss where the places that he goes where that have built relationships with him, and so he can go to a friend of mine and quite happily be at their house for several hours, and he's fine. He loves it. He plays and, you know, he enjoys his little self and he's, you know, really relaxed and happy. But that's not the same with my other half. So it's, even though he does live here, and he's been with him since the day we got him at 8 weeks old, he still doesn't want to stay with daddy that often. And we've worked on that, you know. After all, we had a SA trainer.
No, you're not. You're an SA behaviour consultant.
Oh, yes, sorry, yes. I am an SA behaviour consultant, yeah. But I have been lucky in that when I first started doing this was at the beginning of lockdown, which meant that I have been fortunate enough that I can change my life to stay at home. And before that, we were doing the training, so I know how difficult it is to do the training, and we did get up to you know, short departures, but never got to a point where we were out for hours. But then I changed my life, so now it's very difficult to do the training when you don't have to. That's another difficult one.
That's a really good point.
Actually, a lot of people that I've spoken to have been, well, we've been in lockdown, so we can't do the training. So that's another kind of excuse, or not excuse, but, you know, like a justification that people think that, you know, well, I can't do the training. So,
yeah. Well, we know that you can. I mean, because, you know, you only have to stand outside your front door, really. You don't have to go far at the beginning, do you? And I know that, you know, there's nothing stopping me from doing the training. It's just that I don't have to. And it's... I understand how much emotional involvement goes into the training when you're doing it. You know, I've been the one stood on the other side of the door when you get to 5 minutes looking at the clock going holding your breath, seeing if he's going to move, you know. So I you know, I know how it feels. And in some ways, you've definitely got to have your head in the right space in order to start doing this, which I think is why people quite often wait for such a long time before they start. They really are desperate for it to resolve on its own.
Yeah, It's funny you should say that about being on the other side of the door going, ooh. I don't know about you guys, but what I'm finding is when my client, some, not all of my clients, but when some of my clients are on that last step where they're doing their long duration, that they've got some inner anxiety that sometimes they're not even conscious of, and the dog picks up on that. And so the dog's been lying like a ling on the couch for, you know, throughout the day, throughout the training, and then they get to that last step and then suddenly the dog's like, what's going on? And so I've got one particular client, and I said, because I used to need to get back into it, Atomic Habits, everybody. I'm on chapter 5 of Atomic Habits, so it's very, very good. But I need to get back into my yoga. But one of the yoga exercises that I'm encouraging her to do is you literally just flop over. So, you know, you're standing up and you just flop over, and the blood and kind of your arms are all loosey-goosey, and, you know, the blood goes into your head, and it's very calming if you do it for, you know, a little while. And you can feel yourself more centered, perhaps, is the right way of doing it. So I'm kind of encouraging her to really be aware of her mindset before she does that training, that last step, so that the dog's not picking up on that.
I've had a couple clients, the same kind of thing, where I have them do deep breathing or think of, like one of my clients had brown noise, and she also, they love going to the beach together. So I was like, think happy thoughts of, you know, like use that sound of the brown noise to think about waves and the beach and that sort of thing. And then I've also have another client whose dog is very sensitive to her, any tension that she has or her own anxiety, and so we've been working on that as well. Some dogs are just so sensitive, other dogs don't seem to really notice. So
I think I try to get them to think of something funny when they're doing their training as well, like, so something that amuses them, that's made them smile or laugh. And yeah, so when they're doing that last step, they've got a different mindset.
On a slightly different tangent, sort of, there's some very good apps out there as well, isn't there, that help you with headspace and being in the moment, and little meditations, things that are not going to take you hours, but will take you a couple of minutes a day, that can be very useful for this kind of thing, because you really do need to be in the right place in order to start, don't you? If you're if you're stressed or worried or under pressure, that's the worst time to train. Or if you're,
so what are some strategies that we can suggest for our listeners on, like, trying to get in the right headspace? Certainly, Ness has mentioned yoga and breathing and, you know, thinking happy thoughts and all of those kinds of things. But sometimes that's not quite enough. So what are some what are some other things that y'all can think of?
I was thinking of the, along the lines again, of enjoying your dog. So, you know, remember that this is your friend, and the reason that you got them is still there and still valid. It's just that sometimes in this type of training, it can become very difficult to remember why you got your dog, especially when you can't go anywhere. So if you can't go anywhere without them while you're doing the training, then find some places that you can go with them. Go do something that you've never done before, go do an activity that you've not done before. And even if you've got the type of dog that is reactive to other dogs, or, you know, shouty and lungy and things, there are activities that you can do even with those dogs if you find the right trainer and the right place and the right help that will help you build that relationship back up. Or even online classes, there's a lot of stuff online now that we can do that we could never do before.
Yeah, and trick classes are so good for that, because it's kind of like, I think it really takes some of the pressure off, because it's like, your dog doesn't really need to know how to do this, right? So, and for most people, it doesn't need to do it perfectly. So it's just a fun thing to do together. And some of the fun scent work classes are also good for dogs who tend to be a little more anxious.
I encourage my clients to do trick classes. As you say, there's plenty of online stuff for tricks, that's for sure. And you know, shaping things like shaping the stuff. You know, get a clicker. But I mean, that is also fabulous for mental enrichment for the dog as well. So, you know, the problem solving stuff. So, excuse the noise in the background.
They're at it again. Is there a website? Am I imagining things, or is there a Facebook page to do with shaping?
I don't know.
101 things to do with a cardboard box.
Oh, maybe. I remember that being a challenge. I didn't know it was a Facebook page.
I'll have to see if I can dig it out when we've gone, but I'm sure there's some, it's basically sort of a way to teach you how to teach your dog how to shape behaviours by using a clicker and a cardboard box.
So I'll give my dog, my dogs, my clients this, excuse me. Hey, sorry about that. It's the girls are having a play. It's Your Choice by Susan Garrett. It's a fun exercise that the you know, they can do with their dog, and it's impulse control. And you know, they've been posting videos in my Facebook group of it, and just, you know, just it's just a little bit of fun, and they can see their dog shine and feel good about their dog. And most dogs pick it up really, really quickly. It's Separation Anxiety and Dogs Decoded, if anybody wants to join my Facebook group. Sarah's crying.
Another thing that people can do if they're like not in a good headspace, I think, is to take a short break.
Yes.
Sometimes just taking a week off can help you, like Sarah was saying, focus on the relationship. I think a big part of it is remembering that it's like fear and anxiety, that your dog's not doing it to get back at you or whatever. But I think sometimes when you are in that resentful space, it's easy to blame the dog instead of just realizing that, you know, it's just a thing that you guys have to work through and focusing on what you love about your dog and doing fun things together.
I think that's really hard, especially if there's a couple, you know, and let's say you move into your new house, you've got your new furniture, you go out, you leave your dog, the dog destroys your house, your new house and your new furniture, and husbands, that's it, that dog, you know, you know, you've got maybe two, you know, you it's so stressful, isn't it? So between couples as well.
It is. When you were saying couples, I thought you were going to go in a different direction with it. What I thought you were going to go to was, you know how when it can be a close friend or maybe your significant other, but like when you're a little bit annoyed with them, and it could be for like maybe you're just experiencing pain or you're in a bad mood or you're stressed for other reasons, and everything they do annoys you.
I've never been like that.
The way they're sitting in the chair, the way they're chewing their food, the way breathing.
If they're chewing with their mouth open, they are in trouble.
I have big issues with chewing sounds. Like
I do too. They just drive gross.
Me nuts, right? Like, so I'm really sensitized to that.
I am.
Except for a dog. A dog can crunch where I'm going with it is that when you're in kind of a negative headspace, it's easy to pick out the things that you really don't like about another person or even your dog. Doing things to take care of yourself, and self-care can be kind of big things, going for a massage or a spa day or whatever, but they can also be little things. You know, getting that sitter, not for grocery shopping, but to enjoy time with friends. I mean, like, I think that's one of the thing that a lot of separation anxiety pet parents get stuck with, is that they only use that village to support them for things that are absolutely necessary. So they're still not doing those spontaneous things, or more social things.
Or even just to be, on your own, even if it's just, you know, you need, if you can use your pet sitter, just to have an hour on your own, you know, sitting in the garden without your dog or something. There's nothing wrong in that, and you shouldn't feel, you know, guilty for wanting to spend some time on your own either. That's that, and that's important for us to find that headspace and to find that peace sometimes.
Cannot stress enough, though, about building your village. Yes, daycare is fabulous, but a lot of times daycare is not super flexible for last minute type of things, or maybe even off hours. Like, they might have set hours and you have to drop your dog off for like a full day or a half day. And what you want is an hour, or maybe it's at a time the daycare is closed. So like, daycare is fabulous if that's a good fit for your dog and it's a well-run daycare and all of that stuff. That's great.
And we have an episode specifically about daycares. That would be a good listen if you're trying to find the right one for your dog.
Yes. But it's also nice to have friends and family and maybe even some people that you can, maybe you can babysit their kids every now and then, and they can watch your dog, and it can, because I know sometimes there's financial concerns, right? So like, there's always, not always, frequently things that you can trade. I'll mow your lawn if you watch my dog for some time, you know, that type of thing. So it's not another financial commitment for you.
Or even, you know, if you find, if you know someone else who's got a dog that has issues being left alone, you know, if you can buddy up with someone else with the same problem.
Yeah, I agree. So I've actually pinned a post in my Facebook group, Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded, if anybody wants to join. but you know, seriously, I've had pinned a post at the top of the page so that people can just add in where they're, you know, the city and the country that they're from, so that you know, if they want to, they can try and connect with other people with separation anxiety dogs, and help each other out, hopefully reciprocate with some babysitting.
Or even just if it's for emotional support, if you've just got someone else who actually understands what you're going through. I mean, that's massive. If you've got someone else in the same boat.
So what, ladies, happens if it just is too much?
Well, as we know, that dog ownership's not always rainbows and roses, is it?
No.
And obviously, if we were to sort of like go through what we would want to do ideally, that ideally you would do the training. If you can't do the training, then ideally you would not leave your dog alone. You'd find some way that they never get left alone. And then once we get past those two points where you can't do either, then your next best scenario would be not leaving them alone very much if you can. So if you absolutely have to leave them a couple of hours a week and you've got no choice, then maybe you can get away with that. Maybe you can speak to your vet and see if there is a situation on medication that would help with those short absences that you've got no choice around. Because we all know that for some people, there are certain things that they have no choice of. You know, if you've got medical issues yourself and you need hospital appointments every week for treatment, you've got to go. You can't always say, no, can I do it another time? And then after that is the ultimate, which would be leaving them alone all the time or doing what no one ever wants to do, and that's finding somewhere else for them to live.
Yeah, but I would argue that if you can't manage absences, that while it's always a tough decision to rehome your dog, that's nothing to feel shameful about, because is a huge, huge welfare issue for a dog to be exposed to that kind of anxiety for the 9 hours a day, 5 days a week that you're working. I mean, that's just...
We're talking about chronic, Yeah, we're talking about chronic stress, aren't we? And mm-hmm. we all know what chronic stress does to the body. It's going to end up being long life-term, it's going to end up being complications down the track as they get older. What chronic stress does to the body, it's really bad for us. So, So, yes, it is a welfare issue.
And then if you did go down that road, then we need to make, one of the things that as professionals that we can help you with is if you do work with someone, if you get to that point, you've got someone that you can speak to about it, who's not going to judge your decision. So we would never judge your decision. And the only thing that we would do as trainers would be, if you've got nowhere else to go and that's your only choice, is to try and find the best way for you to move forward with that, whether that be to find your friends or family or some people that you know that would be able to do the training or wouldn't need to leave the dog on their own. Mm. Or, would you need to go through a particular rescue? And a lot of breed rescues can be quite good with things like this, particularly with certain dogs where, because there's so many of them, they do seem to get an awful lot of them with separation anxiety. So there seems to be a certain awareness amongst some breed rescues, doesn't there, for that? And as long as you're honest, I mean, that's the thing that you want to make sure is that you are, if you do go through a rescue, that you do let them know what the complications are, because then they can find the right home.
Right.
Yeah. I feel sorry for people that feel that trapped, that they need to rehome in the sense of they probably feel guilty, if they can't find cover for their dog and they do have to walk out the door and leave their dog home alone, that there's probably a lot of guilt associated with that, but they're probably also feeling guilty thinking, I probably should rehome this dog and I'm now going to feel upset and guilty because this is the road I'm going down, even though I know it might be the best thing for my dog under these circumstances. I've tried everything else. I can't commit to the training for XYZ and now I have to consider this as an option.
And honestly, it's not always easy to find. There's no magical home out there that finds it easy to have a separation anxiety dog. Even if the people are retired or they work from home, they are still going to need to go out to get groceries, to have a meal together, to go to doctor's appointments. I mean, there's certainly homes that are maybe more difficult to have a dog with separation anxiety, but I don't think there's one that people find it just like, oh, this is so easy. It still takes, even if people aren't going to do the training and manage 100%, it still takes time and resources to build that village. And to make sure that you have options of places to leave your dog that are flexible.
Yeah. And you still lose your spontaneity. You've got to game plan everything and make sure you've got things in place for those times when you do need to go out as a family, for example. Kids are playing sport at school, dogs aren't welcome, mum and dad want to go and watch the kids playing footy, what have you got in place to look after the dog? Or they want to go out as a family to the cinemas or anything like that.
Or away on vacation or, there's always a reason to have to leave your dog. There's that. And another thing that I think a professional can help with, aside from the things that we were talking about, taking away some of the overwhelm and that sort of thing, is in cases like this, if there is somebody who is that you're looking to rehome to, we can serve as a partner with you and that person to enlighten them on what the training entails and all of that stuff. So they're going into the situation fully aware of the time and
commitment,
money commitments that are because it's if it's the training, the daycare or other coverage options all cost money, medication if you're doing that. There's just there's some costs involved with having a dog that has a behavioral issue.
Mm. Eyes wide open.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and the thing of it is even if you're going in eyes wide open, like, you know, in quotes, all of the things that having a dog with separation anxiety entails, that's still different than living it.
Yeah.
Right. Thinking about, okay, well, we'll just have to make these plans and we'll have to do this and this. And yeah, those are all fine. But then, like, when you've had the dog for a week, you're like, okay, this is much more restrictive than I thought it was going to be. And then, like, you know, so that's like maybe the first week you start feeling that. And then, you know, down the road, it's just keeps on feeling more and more restrictive.
I mean, I've been training dogs for years, and I've had dogs for years, and I've never had a dog with separation anxiety until I got Ernie. And that came as such a shock, even for somebody who, you know, deals with dogs on a day-to-day, day-in, day-out basis. The fact that I couldn't leave him anywhere at all was like, what? What is going on here?
How did your husband feel about it then? Like, what was his reaction?
Well, he's okay because he goes to work. So he works out all day, and then he's like, yeah, fine, you can go wherever you like, I don't really mind. But I think that's part of the reason that I can't leave him with Ernie that much either, because Danny does, my husband does, he does work very, very long hours, and, you know, a lot of the time over the weekend as well. So he's not here that much. And I think by the time he comes home on a night, Ernie's pretty much curled up and gone to sleep anyway. He's like, you know, it's bedtime. He's a bit like me, he's an early bed.
But I mean, if your husband said to you, hey, let's go and see a movie or something, like initially in the early days when you're like, well, I can't because I can't leave the dog alone and I can't find anyone in this instance to, you know, how did he, because there's an adjustment, isn't there? So you've got this dog, you're not used to having dogs that can't be left. So there must have been a big adjustment for not just you, but for him as well.
To be honest, the dog that we had before, our old lady, as she got older, we could leave her less and less. You could still leave her, but you couldn't leave her for hours and hours. So I think our world had gradually got smaller until we got Ernie. So by the time we got to that point, plus the fact, of course, Danny's married to a dog trainer, and a lot of our other halves probably have other things to think about, I think. So, he, you know, compared to some people's husbands, he just took it all in his stride.
Mm-hmm.
Although he does get concerned that I don't go anywhere. Although I do now because I've got people who can look after him, which is great. But then I find when I do go out without him, I'm lost.
Yeah.
I get so used to my little body that's with me everywhere that when I leave him now, I do find myself feeling a little bit like it's like I've lost an arm.
Yeah. I actually had a call with somebody that thought their dog might have separation anxiety yesterday. And she said that, I said, well, what is it doing that you feel that your dog's got separation anxiety? She said, oh, it just curls up on my bed all day while I'm gone. And I'm like,
oh,
that's lovely. And she said, oh, but I feel so anxious when I walk out the door. I'm worried that, you know, he's got separation anxiety because all he does is lie on my bed all day. And I'm like, I think you're the one with separation anxiety.
Yeah. Well, that can happen. That can happen. Aww. I spend a lot of time with my dog, Rowan, and when he had to go get x-rays, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago, I think. Yeah. And he was gone for the whole day. And I felt lost. I felt a little lost. And so I think that it can be a mutual thing.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm glad that dog didn't have separation anxiety-ness.
Yeah. I did ask her to get a camera on him. So, and I said, look, I'm happy to have a look at a 1 minute clip. If you want to send me that, just I can rest, you know, put your mind at ease. But to me, it doesn't sound like it's got it at all. Yeah, which is good. You know, she was relieved. So it was happy outcome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh. That's so sweet.
Yeah. And I mean, look, the you know, if the dog's curled up in her bed all day, I said to her, like, you know, your scent is in there. She said it won't go out. It's kind of, it does sound like it's got generalized anxiety. So, you know, a little bit noise phobic, blah, 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 blah. So I said it probably is too scared, or it just feels comfortable in the house, you know, rather than being out. I think it's got access to go outside whenever it wants. So, but it probably doesn't feel comfortable out there when she's not there. You know, if she's home, I'm sure it's fine out there in the backyard, but when she's not there, her scent will be all over her bed. It's probably where the dog feels the most safe. So
that's where Rowan spends most of his time when I'm gone. He doesn't have separation anxiety, but that's what he does. Yeah. He lays on my bed.
Yeah, but I mean, when you think about it, you know, it's no fun going out to play on your own, is it?
So what she said was her friend's dogs are quite happy to go out and play by themselves when they're not there. So she thought her dog could be doing the same, but just, you know, not all dogs are the same. So, you know,
it's awesome.
And it's 6 years old. So, you know, it's not not a puppy anymore.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was happy outcome. I was happy for her.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Tales from the Doghouse Separation Anxiety Explained. Today we talked about what are some reasons why training isn't working out, what to do about that, and then also some tips on repairing the relationship with your dog if that's been a bit strained in the process. I am Stacy from Focused Fun. You can find me at focusedfun.net or on Facebook and Instagram at Focused Fun Dogs.
And I'm Ness Jones. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded in Australia. I have a new website. It is simply nessjones.com. So check it out. Woo! It is Separation Anxiety exclusively. So my old website was a bit of this and a bit of that. This one is for separation anxiety dogs, so get into it, nessjones.com.
And you've been listening to me, Sarah McLaren, from the UK, from Separation Anxiety Solutions, with the same old website that I've always had, separationanxietysolutions.com, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram. I got lost for a moment then. Don't forget that you can find us on all your normal podcast platforms and maybe a few less normal ones. We're also on Amazon and Audio, depending on what country you're in. And don't forget to subscribe or like us or leave us a review or anything that you would like to say to make us happy and to make us carry on doing more podcasts, because they're wonderful. Thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you again soon. Bye.
Oh, and also, if you guys have any topics that you are just burning to hear about, or maybe just want to send us off on more tangents, reach out to any of us and let us know. Bye.
Bye.